Welcome to Church Hurts and the good, the bad, and the ugly about church, religion,
and spirituality
with a dash of recovery thrown in. If you've ever had questions about the church, maybe a bit jaded in your attitude toward religion, well, you've come to the right place. Our host, he was an honors philosophy student, ordained a Presbyterian minister, planted three churches, taught at a prestigious university, but now he's just an aging curmudgeon who never quits asking the question why. The host of Church Hurts and Dr. John Bash.
Who is your most favorite famous personality? Writer, actor, politician? Isn't that an easy icebreaker for a small group discussion? I'm guessing your mind's already wandering to the things you tell people about, those antidotes, those everything to your tongue. And now imagine that you have the opportunity to introduce that person to the world, not just with words, but you get to play them as a part of a movie, play them on the big screen. Today, we welcome to the stage the screen actor, writer, talented in so many ways, Max McLean, a man whose credits are easily found on Google, or better yet, at the Fellowship of the Performing Arts webpage, fpatheater.com. Max, it is great having you here. Can you tell me what it is like to play C.S. Lewis on the screen? But before that, let me ask you this. You really believe this stuff, don't you?
Screen. Oh, the idea of Lewis, the most reluctant convert, how he went from vigorous debunker of Christianity to, as he said, I finally gave in and admitted that God is God, knelt and prayed, perhaps that night, the most dejected, reluctant convert in all England. And Lewis helped to clarify that for me. I think your question was, do I enjoy playing Lewis? I love playing Lewis. I love being that smart for 90 minutes, to be able to use language the way he does, to bring that constellation of thought, story, prose, poetry, intellect, compassion, his emotional intensity, that, you know, what he thought, what he felt were so linked. I love doing it. I loved playing him in the film, too.
Tell me this. The film has a subtitle, The Untold Story of C.S. Lewis.
Right.
And yet C.S. Lewis is one of the most famous skeptics turned Christian in the past century. What's that twist that's untold about that?
Well, it was certainly Norman Stone, the director, he thought that was a really appropriate way to introduce, because you didn't put C.S. Lewis at the title. If you said C.S. Lewis, the most reluctant convert, it might come off as a documentary. And yet we wanted to get Lewis in the story. And really this part of his story, I mean, he's known for Narnia, he's known for Shadowlands. Certainly among scholars, Lewis scholars, and among sort of Protestant and conservative Catholic, conservative Protestant religious people, his conversion story is really pretty well known, but it's never been told on screen, at least not completely, and certainly not using his words. The story comes from his memoirs, Surprised by Joy. Joy to him is a technical term, meaning longings, Sehnsucht, the sort of German word for longing. And Lewis used that longing as his pointer to heaven. He famously said that if I find in myself a desire that no experience in this world could satisfy, the most probable explanation is I was made for another world. And Lewis's genius is that he points people to another world. You know, we postmoderns, we think this world is the only world that exists. And Lewis said, the question is, that's the real question everybody answers. This world, the only world that exists, or is there another world? Because if you answer, if this is the only world that exists, If you answer yes to that question, then any other question, it becomes, you know, immaterial. So he wanted to make sure that people realize it's an either or question. There either is or there is not another world. And if there is another world, what is our accountability to it?
Earlier this year, The Guardian, interesting of all kind of news outlets, but The Guardian did an article about the film being made and expressed the possibility that there really might be a timeliness to this, which I find interesting because Lewis is such a mid-century guy. I really almost see him as a transitional from the kind of Victorian era, but he was so influenced by World War One and World War II. Talk to me how he speaks to the culture today and in postmodernism.
It's very interesting. I see him as a bridge to postmodernism now, primarily because he's so adamant about this other world that we're not allowed to talk about. And yet he talks about it so imaginatively in all his writings. And because we don't hear about it in any other platforms, except those people a large number of people still go to church. But even there, it's still in a very concrete sort of world of all these Christian suppositions. And what Lewis wants to do is, the Christian supposition needs to be earned. Before you can talk about Christ, you have to you have to talk about, Christ came to save us from what? If we don't have any feeling of that we're guilty, we have any, if there's nothing to be forgiven for, then what's the point of having a savior? So Lewis wants us to really reintroduce that we are accountable, that we don't live up to, if we have these feelings of guilt, why have them? If there's no moral imperative to follow, then where does this sense of guilt come from? That was really important to Lewis. He says famously, the Christianity doesn't solve the problem of pain, it creates it. Because, the problem of pain would not be a problem unless you had some assurance that that ultimate reality is loving and just and righteous. If we're a product of atoms colliding in skulls, biochemistry and physics, then the pain and suffering is part of a reality that's capricious. And part of a reality that is unrighteous, is unloving. Lewis wants us to ask those questions.
Really, in the classic line, reminding us it's hard to describe evil in a positive way. We have to talk about it as the absence of good.
And he also says that my argument against God was that the universe was so cruel and unjust. But where did I get my notion of cruel and unjust? Yeah. I call a line crooked because I have some idea of a straight line. What am I comparing this universe with? If when I call it cruel and unjust, there's no category. A friend of mine, Frank Turek, says we are always stealing from God.
That's good. Let me just take a break for a second here and mention that people might still be able to get tickets. I mean, it's sold out in a lot of places, but you can still go to cslewismovie.com.
They keep adding. They keep adding screens. They're being very generous about that.
I missed it. cslewismovie.com.
cslewismovie.com.
The way to get it. And I have seen this movie and it is one of the, you don't just want to go once. I mean, you want to go over and over. You've heard a little bit, and Max, you're quoting directly. I'm sitting there saying, stop, rewind. It's just amazing, amazing stuff. And let me say this as well. This is Church Hurts And. And you can go to churchhurtsand.org to find out more about what we do. We have about 60 podcasts up, but I work with Standing Stone Ministries, where we help people and come alongside people in the ministry. And we're fully dependent upon your support in doing that. But let me mention a few of our other shows you might want to catch. One is Fiction Meets Life, where we interviewed the novelist Michael Phillips, who's produced so many of George MacDonald's works, who we remember C.S. Lewis called the master. And you also might enjoy our conversation with Michael Christensen entitled Romantic Theology. And then there's one, Michael, too, called Deep Pain with Dr. Mark Talbot, which we're going to do a lot more with him. So click on, if you're enjoying this show, click on some of those. And if you would, click on the donate button and find out more about us. It doesn't go into your credit card too quickly. You still have to click another button after that. But Max, this is Church Hurts Ann, where we know that church is associated with pain for many people, personally, historically, and considered irrelevant in the modern era. C.S. Lewis struggled with that too, didn't he?
Yes. I mean, you know, he was an Irish Protestant, and you know, he grew up, his picture of Christianity was through his father, whom he had a terrible relationship with. Mm-hmm. And part of it was your religion was depicted by what you were against, and primarily because you were Protestant because you weren't Catholic. And that was what organized your community. And that really left him in a terrible distaste, and it still does, you know, as we experience that here. But of course, he lost his mother to cancer. He prayed. God didn't answer his prayer, so he assumed that prayer doesn't work. Of course, he admits later that he didn't approach God as savior or judge, but as magician. He simply wanted him to restore the status quo. And then, you know, after he'd done his business, he would just simply go away. You know, we're kind of similar that way. I mentioned his relation with his dad. He experienced the butchery of World War I, and the savagery of it. You know, he said the war was the place where youth and laughter go, the hell where youth and laughter go. He came back from the war with the opinion that either there was no God behind the universe, a God indifferent to good and evil, or worse, an evil God. And so that was his starting point in terms of how deep his atheism was, his unbelief was. I mean, I he had the rhetorical gifts. He would have been like a 1930s, 1940s, 1920s Christopher Hitchens. He had those gifts.
Speaking of those gifts, Max, you've done a lot on Lewis, not just this. You aren't mm-hmm. the actor who kind of studied the guy for the part. I mean, you've written a lot on Lewis. You've done a lot of other things. A lot of people don't know about the Screwtape Letters. Can I just get you to do a few lines and set up? You did the Screwtape Letters on Off Broadway, or that play was going for quite a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, it ran for 300 performances at the West Side Theater here in New York, and it toured extensively. It played in London. It's a really important show. I mean, it's a very important book. You know what it is. Lewis is talking about spiritual warfare from a demon's point of view. He looks at temptation from the devil's perspective, the art of temptation of an unsuspecting human on earth. And he himself was sort of the model for the patient, the object of Screwtape's the tempting that Screwtape did. He was the object of it. And that's what makes the book so compelling, because he was, he was being so transparent about his own bouts with temptation, you know. And he constantly talks about, you know, we like to point fingers at great crimes and sins and how those other guys are so awful, you know, whether it be, you know, different political party or maybe a different tribe, you know, they're different than us. And Lewis says, no, you've got to talk about the pettiness in your own heart. You got to talk about the anger, the greed that's where the devil lives there, and all of the offshoot of that. So it's in the small everyday things that your heart changes. And he makes this marvelous point in Mere Christianity. He says that, you know, every time you make a choice, and when you consider how many choices you make in a given day, you know, hundreds of choices to do this as opposed to that. And then if you multiply that by weeks, by months, by years, hundreds of thousands of little tiny choices, every one of those choices changes you. And you're slowly becoming either a more heavenly person or a more hellish person, because your character is being formed by the decisions that you make, those small decisions that you make. And that's kind of the heart of what the Screwtape Letters is about.
It's interesting. He deals with such a serious topic, and yet I bet there's a lot of laugh lines in the play.
Well, he's talking about human experience, you know, and you know, a lot of them need to be set up, so it's like hard to do it. But I remember just the cleverness. The safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without milestones or signposts. Your affectionate Uncle Screwtape.
You've also done a lot of voiceovers, and I just mentioned that because I know a lot of people who, they know the Bible because they listen to Max McLean. What was it like doing do we call that a voiceover of the Bible?
Well, it's more of a narration, I think. It's probably more like a book on tape. I've recorded the Bible 5 different times, and it's a glorious, you know, more people know my voice than they know my stage work or my film work. And I'm just always grateful for that. My initial thought in terms of the work that I ended up doing was to use the skills and techniques developed in the theater and apply it to presenting the Christian revelation, whether it be scripture or works of C.S. Lewis or others.
I was struck. Or I shouldn't say I was struck. I am struck numerous times in your readings. It's almost better than commentary. Just reading it with the right emphasis, with the right pauses, parts of scripture that seemed really hard to understand all of a sudden become clear. I guess I'm trying to say thank you. I mean, it's really a gift, and wow.
Thank you. I think Paul says somewhere, I think it's in Galatians, he says, I wish I could be here so I could send you could hear my tone. because he couldn't get that all in writing. And that's sort of it. You know, you're dealing with intention. You're dealing with what's motivating this particular moment. And you make a choice based on that, and you deliver it to give people something to grab onto, to hold onto. So in many ways, it is a kind of an exegesis. So I do feel responsible. But you do let the language of the text guide you into how to articulate that moment.
Lewis was anything but wishy-washy. And yet it seems that everybody wants to claim him from all sorts of different perspectives, whether it's even Roman Catholic. I mean, it just reminds me of it. Like everybody wants to associate with Augustine. Everybody kind of wants to claim Luther. And Lewis is another one of those characters. And am I right in maybe appealing to the title Mere Christianity to find an answer to why that is?
Well, you know, he, in his preface to Mere Christianity, he says that he wanted to concentrate on those tenets of the faith that were believed by most Christians most of the time, and so, you know, he didn't comment, for instance, on the deification of Mary, you know, and he explains why, But on the other hand, on the fundamentals of the faith, he believed that there is but one God and that Jesus Christ is his only son. You know, that was a non-negotiable. He believed in prayer. He believed in the judge. He believed in the second coming. He believed in the judgment. He believed in heaven and hell. He said when, you know, and of course, Mere Christianity was done during the Blitz. And he said that, you know, he was pretty frank about the reality of the Christian revelation, because he said, when bombs destroy our homes, talk of Armageddon no longer seemed fanciful, as in this weak piping time of peace. And we experienced a little bit of that, you know, here in New York, where I'm from, where I live. 9/11, 20 years ago, is there was an immediate reality of our mortality, that, you know, that nothing clarifies the mind so much as knowing that you're going to be hung in a fortnight. So I think Lewis brings before us the truth that here we have no continuing city. We await the one to come. And that's why he's constantly pointing to this other world, you know, that the Christian revelation is that the God who created the world came into the world, was unjustly killed by the world to rescue the world from death. That is what is to be believed. And that's what people have a hard time believing. And, you know, he feels that so much Christianity is a vague slush of humanitarianism with a few Christian words sprinkled in like salt and pepper. He says, give me a clear eyed skeptic any day. At least you can talk sense.
Oh, that is so Lewis. I watched an interview a while back with Douglas Gresham, one of C.S. Lewis's stepsons. And I thought it was so interesting when he was talking about Jack, of course, the name everybody who knew Lewis called him by. And he said when he first met Jack, he was actually quite disappointed, because he was expecting a more lively character fitting the creator of Narnia. You know, where's the chainmail? Where's the sword? In walks this Oxford professor.
A disheveled one at best, too, that probably hadn't changed his clothes in days and had cigarette burns in his jacket. He was pretty slovenly in his dress, and he didn't care about things like that. He was an Oxford don. But his mind was, Douglas was very impressed by the wit and the sharpness of the intellect, and sharpened his intellect. In fact, I just had an email exchange with him, and he commented on the film, because I sent him a screener, and he said it was really hard to watch because, you know, he just lived through all that, particularly the early scenes with the loss of his mother, because in many ways that experience was repeated in his life.
Right. Oh, I can't imagine watching it, particularly so much of this was filmed on site. I mean, what a beautiful film, you know, the work, the filmography is just amazing being there. And you were filming a lot of it during the pandemic, weren't you?
Yeah, we did. I mean, it was a blessing in the sense that, you know, the British film industry was opening up in August of 2020. And Norman Stone, the director, told me that, you know, if in June, that if we could get if we wanted to, we could film it in the fall, because and he could get a really good crew, because nobody had worked since March. And I said, well, if you can confirm that and make sure the locations are available, we'd have a go of it. And we did. He did. And I got my board to fund the filming of it. We'd worry about post-production and worry about distribution later. And so we began filming in mid-September, finished in mid-October, and here we are a year later, about ready to release it.
Well, I just want to thank you for your work, not just for this film. And it is just fun to be able to really see, you know, you are a theater actor who becomes all that much more alive on film. And I hope it was kind of a treat for you. My guess is it was different, though, wasn't it?
Oh, it's so different. Being, you know, in film, they cut it up into 100 pieces and then do everything out of sequence. And then the director puts it all back together. Of course, I knew the sequence, so it would have been very challenging for another actor to do it. Whereas, you know, on theater, you do it consecutively, you rehearse it consecutively, and you do it consecutively. The one thing is, on film, I don't have to do it again. You know, it's there. On celluloid, and will be there. I think it'll be an evergreen project that'll be watched for years.
Well, I do too. Again, I encourage people, if you can get to this film, bring a friend. And it's a great discussion starter. But I want to just say a few words before I let you go, Max. What church should you go to? Quote, and above all, you must be asking which door is the true one, not which pleases you best by its paint and paneling. The question should never be, do I like this kind of service? But are these doctrines true? Is holiness there? Does my conscience move me towards this? Is my reluctance to move this door due to my pride or my mere taste or my personal dislike for this particular doorkeeper? Unquote. C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity.
That's a great quote.
In my lifetime, I've observed faith in God moving from a rather passive assumption in the culture around me to a rather passive irrelevance. Mm-hmm. Which church should you go to is a question with far more assumptions than a modern American would now make. Atheists have claimed the high ground in academia, somehow assuming they've won the day, disinterested in revisiting arguments from antiquity, which allowed theism to dominate world history. In my world, I come across a lot of atheists and less courageous agnostics. When allowed the chance, I often express to them my envy of their assurance. I tell them I might be willing to join them, but I just can't get there intellectually. This usually causes them pause. That's their line. Did he just say he can't get to atheism intellectually? What they don't know is that I don't believe they came to a belief in the absence of God intellectually either. It doesn't take a genius to look at the sunset and have a pretty good intuition that this didn't come from nothing or chance, which is another word for nothing. As prayers are canceled in public gatherings, I haven't noticed many hospitals and senior centers asking for fewer chaplains. When one is waiting for results of the cancer screening, I don't know many calling out to the local atheist society for help. If you are reluctant to follow thinking, which could land you in the camp of Christ followers, perhaps it would be worth the time to meet one of your predecessors. His name is C.S. Lewis. You can find him in the movie, The Most Reluctant Convert. Oh, and don't be surprised if he becomes a rather good friend. It's worth a thought. For Church Hurts Ann, this is John Bash. Go and enjoy God today, won't you?
Well, that was worth a thought for sure. And brings us to the end of this edition of Church Hurts Ann. Next week, it's rumored we'll be walking on the edge of controversy, stirring the pot of denial, and finding movement of the divine. Our host, Dr. John Bash, is a shepherd with Standing Stone, a nonprofit ministry committed to caring for pastors and Christian leaders at risk of leaving the ministry prematurely. Come visit us at churchhurtsand.org. Tell us your story while you're there. Until then, remember, Church Hurts isn't the end of the story. Now go into the end. Enjoy God today, won't you?